Nobody on the U.S. side or the South Korean side is really thinking very seriously about invading North Korea.
The Olympics conclude. Will talks with North Korea begin? It's Monday, February 26th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Xi Jinping looks to remain in power for a long time, partly with trade. Corruption rising in Australia. Hong Kong may have a rising Olympic speed skater. Fashion for disabled. Robots aiming to break barriers. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Few expected any diplomatic breakthroughs from Ivanka Trump's visit to South Korea as she led the U.S. delegation at the closing ceremonies of the Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games. And there weren't any. The daughter of U.S. President Donald Trump paid a visit to South Korean President Moon Jae-in Friday at the presidential residence known as the Blue House in Seoul, where she congratulated the president for hosting the Olympic Games and thanked him and the First Lady for their hospitality.
It is a great honor to be here in South Korea with the U.S. delegation. We are very, very excited to attend the 2018 Winter Olympic Games, to cheer for Team USA, and to reaffirm our strong and enduring commitment with the people of the Republic of Korea.
Ivanka Trump delivered a personal message to Moon from her father, President Trump, about his announcement on sanctions for North Korea, a set of restrictions he called the largest ever for North Korea, imposing what the White House calls maximum pressure on the reclusive nation and its practice of illegal shipping and trade designed to evade United Nations sanctions targeting its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Seoul's Unification Ministry announced on Friday that North and South Korea would hold joint working-level talks this week in the Panmunjom Joint Security Area that is part of the inter-Korean border's demilitarized zone. South Korean defense officials have reiterated that joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises, delayed during the Winter Olympics, will resume with an announcement expected before April. After a New Year's Day address by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, the two Koreas met at a senior level and competed jointly in the Olympics. Kim's sister, Kim Yo-jung, attended the opening ceremonies and delivered a letter to South Korea's President Moon Jae-in proposing a summit. The North has not tested a ballistic missile since late November or a nuclear device since September. Pyongyang views the joint exercises, conducted annually, as provocative and a prelude to invasion. Grant Newsham, a former Marine officer and senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty they are vital to maintaining the skills to conduct effective operations.
Plus, you have a lot of new troops and new officers who come to participate, and they need to learn how to do it as well. So this sort of routine, ongoing, continuous exercising really is essential, just as it would be for a baseball team. You've got to keep practicing. Plus, there's also, of course, a political, psychological aspect to this in terms of demonstrating commitment on both sides, the United States and South Korea. So there's a very practical, operational reason for doing these. And there's also an important political reason as well.
Are these defensive or offensive in design? North Korea obviously considers them a prelude to invasion.
Of course they will. But these are essentially defensive. This is the U.S. and South Korea are operating on a strategic defensive when it comes to the Korean Peninsula. The best way to look at this is defensive. Of course, everything that the Americans do, everything the South Koreans do, is viewed by North Korea as the prelude to an invasion. But one doesn't need to be privy to inside information to know that nobody on the U.S. side or the South Korean side is really thinking very seriously about invading North Korea. These particular exercises should be viewed as defensive in nature.
Will this end this short-lived rapprochement between the Koreas?
It won't help. Keep it going. I would expect that North Korea will sort of play rough again and probably cause some trouble. But then again, they have been very successful by holding out these lures, these sort of attractive sort of bait to South Korea. And I would imagine they will continue doing that, maybe mixing it, though, with some saber rattling as well. But certainly the love fest that we've seen at the Olympics. I wouldn't expect that to continue much longer after the closing ceremonies.
The official North Korean KCNA news agency last week denounced the intention to resume the military exercises as a, quote, wild act of ruthlessly trampling even a small sprout of peace. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. United States says we will see if North Korea willingness to talk is denuclearization first step. Olympic Games of New Horizons close in Pyeongchang. China proposes dropping term limits for President Xi Jinping. For Rohingya, little progress, but, quote, nobody is coming to kill us. North Korean ice hockey player who defected lauds effort of joint women's team. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Central Committee of China's Communist Party has proposed removing term limits for the country's president and vice president from the Constitution. That's according to a report by the official Xinhua News Agency. Currently, the Constitution says that the president and vice president shall serve no more than two consecutive terms of 5 years. The change would allow Chinese President Xi Jinping to remain in office beyond 2023. He has been president since 2013. Xinhua also reported that the Communist Party of China Central Committee proposed writing into the country's constitution the Xi Jinping thought on socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era. One of Xi Jinping's biggest initiatives is to create a modern version of the ancient Silk Road trading routes in his so-called Belt and Road Initiative, designed to further boost the quickly growing Chinese economy. There is discussion among Western nations of a competing quad trade alliance, as VOA Asia's Ira Melman discusses with Michael Beckley, assistant professor of political science at Tufts University.
The Belt and Road Initiative is supposed to invest upwards of $1 trillion in 69 countries between China and Europe. The basic idea would be to reconstitute the Silk Road by building lots of roads and bridges and tunnels and infrastructure in those countries. And if China pulls this off, then it would basically create a Chinese-centric order across Eurasia. The Quad initiative, which is still sort of fledgling at this point, would be a way to counter that. I don't know the details, but I don't think it would be nearly as ambitious in terms of the amount of money that's invested. But I think the basic idea would be to provide countries in Central Asia, South Asia, Southeast Asia with economic alternatives to China so that their economies don't become totally dependent on China's for investment, for capital, and for trade.
Is there enough room for both?
I think there definitely is. I mean, the countries in these regions are going to benefit a lot from essentially playing China and the members of the Quad off of each other. I think from a purely economic perspective, it's probably a huge benefit for these countries. And I think neither the Chinese nor the members of the Quad are seeing this as some way to accomplish zero-sum aims. So at the end of the day, I think both initiatives will exist side by side and they'll compete, but ultimately we'll have to exist together.
Tell us what countries are part of the Quad.
You have Australia, India, Japan, and the United States. And the Quad's been around for years now, I think or over a decade, but it hadn't met in a number of years until recently.
What kind of conversations do you think are going on here in Washington this weekend between Turnbull and Trump dealing with this?
I think it's, from what I've heard, it's still in the preliminary stages. So it's trying to, first of all, determine areas to invest in, priority areas, priority projects, and then second of all, how to raise the capital. You know, the members, Australia seems to be pretty eager to make this happen, but it's not clear that India and Japan are fully on board. So I think figuring out ways to actually rally some consensus among the members of the Quad in addition to then sketching out the broad objectives of the infrastructure initiative.
Michael Beckley, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Tufts University, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Happening now in Asia, a powerful earthquake has struck the Pacific island nation of Papua New Guinea, but no tsunami warning has been issued. The U.S. Geological Survey says the 7.5 magnitude quake was centered about 90 kilometers south of Porgera. There was no immediate reports of casualties or damage. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Monday morning. We're glad you're starting out your week with us on VOA Asia. Australia has slipped in a global corruption index. That's according to a group called Transparency International. The United States is ranked 16th, while New Zealand tops the list as the world's least corrupt nation. Somalia is at the bottom of 180 countries. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us more on Australia's current position.
Australia appears to be failing in its efforts to crack down on bribery, according to the latest survey conducted by Transparency International, a non-governmental organisation based in Germany. The group said developed countries, including Australia, appear to be lagging in their efforts to combat corruption in the public sector. It pointed to an inadequate regulation of foreign political donations in Australia, conflict of interest in planning approvals, revolving doors, and improper industry lobbying in large-scale mining projects. While Australia's ranking is unchanged, it remains equal 13th out of 180 countries. Its corruption score has slipped 8 points since the index started in its current form in 2012. Concern about Australia's ranking comes as debate continues about the need for a nationwide anti-corruption body, similar to the Independent Commission Against Corruption in the state of New South Wales. It was set up in 1989 and has scored many notable victories, including the jailing of corrupt state politicians. Professor A.J. Brown, who leads a project called Strengthening Australia's National Integrity System for Transparency International, says much more work needs to be done.
We don't have a federal anti-corruption body, amongst other things. So it's also about the fact that our track record in terms of government commitment to controlling foreign bribery or money laundering and some of the things that the private sector is also involved in internationally is not that strong. We're moving, but we've been moving very slow and very late and not very comprehensively.
This year, New Zealand and Denmark were ranked highest in the Transparency International survey. South Sudan and Somalia were the lowest-ranked nations. The best-performing region was Western Europe, while the most corrupt regions were Sub-Saharan Africa, followed by Eastern Europe and Central Asia. The survey found that more than 6 billion people live in countries that are corrupt. Transparency International said most countries fail to protect the independence of the media, which plays a crucial role in preventing corruption. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news from VOA Asia. China says it plans to scrap a two-term limit for the country's president and vice president, a move that could allow Chinese leader Xi Jinping to stay in office indefinitely. The 64-year-old Xi has been China's president since 2013 and is expected to be formally re-elected at a meeting of the country's largely rubber-stamped legislature early next month. Always available is VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, after 2 weeks of action in Pyeongchang, the 2018 Winter Olympics Games have come to a close. VOA Asia intern Nick Sobel spoke with an aspiring Olympian, speed skater Sydney Chu, who is training in the so-called DMV, the Washington area, including D.C., Maryland, and Northern Virginia. Speed skating is one of the most physically demanding sports. Nick spoke with the Hong Kong-born athlete in the locker room after a practice session in the early morning hours of 4 a.m., when Chu spoke about how he started skating at a young age.
In Hong Kong, it's a pretty small sport. Like, there has been, you know, Olympic level skaters from Hong Kong, but in general at the grassroots level, there's not many speed skaters in Hong Kong. So it was a really a unique thing to do back then. And so ever since I got on speed skates and, you know, did my first ice session, I completely loved that feeling of the ice. I had that feeling when I was, you know, doing a game in hockey. And so I just felt captivated about it, yeah.
Yeah, and so were you born in Hong Kong and then moved here? Or what's your background?
So I was born in Hong Kong, yeah. And I'm actually an American citizen. So it was natural to come back to the U.S. My parents were working abroad. So, and I got a scholarship at GW. So I knew that D.C. was kind of this speed skating hub, I guess, in the entire U.S. Most of the speed skaters that, you know, reach the Olympic level for the U.S. are from Washington, D.C., or the DMV area. And so, I thought that was a great opportunity. I wanted to train for the 2022 Olympics, and it's a great environment here.
And, you know, it's obviously a pretty crazy routine. You know, it's a lot of dedication and sacrifice, especially from parents. So, you know, is it the same thing growing up, your parents are in here at... You're at the ice rink at 4 a.m. and you know, what's it like having to go to school after that?
To me, I'm just used to it because it just requires so much discipline. And I feel a lot of people lack that. You know, I have a lot of friends complaining about 8 a.m. classes, you know, I'm just But for me, I really want, the Olympic dream for all athletes is the highest attainable goal for us. And to sacrifice anything for that, that's it makes sense for us. Waking up at 3 a.m., we don't think about, you know, whatever, but yeah, it's just sacrifice and discipline. So, you know, I usually wake up at 3 a.m., come to practice at 4 a.m., and then right after practice, do some foam rolling. You know, we have to sharpen our skates, and after that, head on the metro back to school, go to school, do all my homework, and then come back for nighttime practice. Yeah.
What about the diet and exercise? What goes into it?
The diet's really important because if you don't have enough protein, if you don't have enough carbs in there, you're not gonna make the training. And if you don't make the training, you get punished and you need to do more laps. So you're kind of forced to have a better diet. And so for us, it's a high carb diet. I usually eat over 3,000 calories a day, 3,200 calories a day. That's my count. And so we burn at least 1,000 calories a day. So that's loading up on calories, loading up on protein and carbs. Yeah, it's a pretty all-around diet, yeah.
You know, one thing that I thought was so funny and interesting was I was looking at the standings from the U.S., you know, qualifiers, and half the names are an American first.
Asian Americans, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things now in this story is, you know, do you think this is a trend we'll continue to see?
So we have, a lot of Korean immigrants in the DMV. And so I think a lot of them find a sense of community, just us Asians in this sport. And so it's a really popular sport back home, back in China, back in Korea. So coming back here is kind of a second home for a lot of people. I haven't been in the DMV for a while, but from my understanding, it started off as only Koreans, and then it became more inclusive to Chinese. You see Filipino skaters, you see a lot of other different skaters. And I feel the speed skating community is becoming more inclusive and becoming much wider.
See more on aspiring Olympic speed skater Sydney Chu at VOA Asia Facebook. Chu hopes to become one of the first speed skaters to represent Hong Kong at the 2022 Winter Olympics Games in Beijing. This news from VOA Asia, hailing the Pyeongchang Olympics as the Games of New Horizons. The International Olympics Committee declared the 2018 Winter Games closed Sunday, IOC President Thomas Bach praising North and South Korea for marching together during the opening ceremony. Beijing is hosting the next Winter Olympics in 2022. All the big stories come your way throughout every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a new exhibit showcases gadgets and inventions by designers striving to make disabled people's lives easier in style. VOA's Faith Lapidus tells us more with her unique style.
A hearing aid that looks like a gem-encrusted earring. An outfit that allows deaf people to feel music vibrations. These are just two of the fashionable assisted devices on display at the Cooper Hewitt Design Museum in New York.
This is a whole new trend in prosthetics where, again, it's not about concealing what you need to be more able, but really celebrating it like one would celebrate a tattoo.
These dazzling, colorful prosthetic covers from the Canadian design company Alleles can turn a titanium leg into a work of art.
It's about breaking down that stigma, right? So you're no longer hiding a hearing aid or hiding a prosthetic leg. You're saying, I'm more able with this tool that has been designed so well, and I'm not embarrassed about it.
The key to success for lots of these products is that they're practical and anyone can appreciate them. Nike's FlyEase sneakers, for example, were designed for a student with cerebral palsy, but the wraparound zipper and adjustable strap would be welcomed by anyone who's tried to get a toddler to put on shoes. The vibrating GPS Wayband bracelet for blind and low-vision runners takes navigation information and turns it into touch-based information that anyone can use. A larger market means products can be more affordable.
If you can create a device that was just from the very beginning, just ultra-blind friendly, and then not only could blind runners use it, but any runner could use it, then, well, like, now everyone is paying for the research and development, and you get to move the whole community and the possibility of that community forward by, like, leaps and bounds in a much smaller time frame.
So everyone can benefit from the growing market of products designed to make life easier and more stylish. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Most analysts and economists agree that robots are slowly replacing humans in many jobs. They weld and paint car bodies, sort merchandise in warehouses, explore underground pipes, and inspect suspicious packages. Yet we still don't see robots as domestic help so much, except for robotic vacuum cleaners. VOA's George Puditch reports robotics experts say there is another barrier that robots need to cross in order to work alongside humans.
Robots in this car factory quickly weld auto bodies. But there are no humans around, because this type of robot would not know how to prevent inadvertently harming a person.
These robots are effectively blindfolded. They perform the same task all over and over again and cannot adapt to any changes.
Okay, it is on this floor.
Today's robots designed to mingle with humans are still very slow, cannot do very many tasks, and mostly dispense information. Arizona State University robotics professor Henny Ben-Amor says roboticists are now developing the next generation of automatons that will be able to take into account their human co-workers.
These robots can, for example, hand over a tool to you. They can help you lift a heavy object, etc. And this is a paradigm shift when you compare it to original or kind of old school robotics, industrial robotics.
Since robots are more powerful than humans, their designers will have to make them incapable of harming their co-workers. In order to do that, these machines will have to be much more intelligent. The robot's motion will have to be continually coordinated with the human's motion.
It's all about understanding the human co-worker, engaging and interacting at the right time. Because what you would like to have is a robot that helps you out in all situations where you need it, but at the same time, if you don't need the robot, it should not be cluttering the environment.
It remains an enormous engineering feat, so Ben-Amor says robots in domestic environments are still a long way off. Autonomous cars, he says, are much closer, while collaborative robots should start replacing traditional robots in manufacturing industries within the next 5 years. George Puditch, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can always find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us on the radio throughout much of Asia, like at Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who is listening to our program today, and wherever you happen to be in the world. Let us know. Send us a message through VOA Asia Facebook or an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Jonah Cummings, managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.